Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Abby Hanlon, former teacher turned author, self-taught illustrator, who gave a voice to Dory Phantasmagory. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 295 of the podcast with Abby Hanlon, author-illustrator of Dory Dory Black Sheep, the third book in her Dory Phantasmagory chapter book series. We are obsessed with Dory here at All the Wonders. We love the books. Our kids love the books. We all have this habit of sneaking Dory into any book lists or recommendations we make to friends and colleagues, and sometimes while even standing in the children's book sections of big-name chain bookstores. That's why we're celebrating all the wonders of Dory Phantasmagory. All the books, all the love and joy and mischief, all of the amazing work Abby has done to make this book so special to so many readers. And now, I hope you enjoy getting to know the very special person behind Dory Phantasmagory. Here's episode number 295 of the podcast with Abby Hanlon. Welcome to the podcast, Abby Hanlon. I have waited to talk to you. I'm so excited.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Matthew.
Abby, I literally, having come off of not recording our conversation to now be recording on record, I want to tell you, do you know that you write Dory Phantasmagory and that that book is amazing? Because it is. Because Dory is amazing, Abby. Amazing.
Thank you. It's funny that you say, do I know that I write it? Because I feel like I didn't write it and it was written somehow by my kids or my unconscious or something. But I definitely feel somehow disconnected to it. But so it's funny that you phrase it that way. But I just want to start by saying thank you to you for hosting this podcast. I've listened to so many episodes and, you know, even though we talked about, I live in Brooklyn, which is like the children's book capital of the world. I think, you know, that being an author and an illustrator is a very isolating career. And, you know, I have to say that your podcast has opened up so many lives to me, being able to hear the voices and stories and personalities of so many other author and illustrators all around the country. It's really such a remarkable gift, you know,
thank you.
Especially to people who are working alone. So
it is, you know, in that way, we are your people. Because I would say the same thing about school librarians. And I have on record many times that we, even though we're in a building full of teachers, much like you're in a city full of illustrators, what we do, the work we do, makes us solitary, makes us different,
yes,
makes us stand out. Yeah. And so it is those opportunities at library conferences or going onto Twitter or places like that, Skyping, that's when we get to connect. So it is really exciting to be able to have that. And I'm glad that you have come to know some of your colleagues through their voice on this podcast.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, going back to that library thing, one of my favorite things when I go to those conferences is the after conference times when we're just out at a bar and we get to talk and get to be fans of one another. And so I strive to recreate that sense of candidness when we are on the podcast. And already I can tell that, I get that Abby is the woman behind Jewelry. I like the cadence in the way you talk, the excitement. I feel it. Although I have to, and I'm going to just full disclosure here, and I didn't get a chance to say this to you ahead of time. When I read Dory, it feels so much, the language feels so much like Roald Dahl that I feel like there are moments when I can't help but read it in my brain with an accent. But also, I'm in awe of what you've tapped into, Abby, because to me, that's sacred ground you're walking on, and you're doing it so well. It's really something
that
marvelous.
That's the ultimate compliment. I mean, when I was reading Matilda to my kids, I literally got a sore throat from acting out Miss Trunchbull. I just got completely, I became psychotic. I was screaming at them, in the bed during story time, becoming her. So, I really felt that.
Oh my God, I love that you're that person. I'm so glad. Oh, I'm so glad. You've got to be one of the greatest people ever then to have at a school visit because of the way that I would imagine when you conceptualize these characters, or maybe the better way to say it for you then is when they present themselves to you, when Dory presented herself to you, or when I don't know, anybody in your books has presented themselves to you, it must just be, I keep thinking, when Goblin presented himself to you, it must just be that you sort of have it feels as if you have a way of just knowing them when they walk in. Or getting to know them, perhaps, through exploring through your art and your story.
Yeah, I mean, I school visits definitely helps because I used to be a first grade teacher. So
First grade? That's the best. Oh, they're such babies. They're learning how to read.
Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah. So most of my school visits are first grade, actually. First grade is my sweet spot. So I feel really comfortable in that environment. I guess it's easy for me to share with them. It's easy, it's easy to talk to them, and I'm not scared of them the way that I am with adults,
Wait, I have a connection with you and a reference in Dory. So I should say to the listeners that you, when they hear this, you have a new Dory out, book 3, Dory Black Sheep.
Yep.
And that's very exciting. Congratulations on the book. It's
Thank you.
Super good. And it's got those crazy random things that I love about your writing, which I'll probably end up reading back to you today throughout our chat. But here's a connection about school visits in first graders that I wanted to bring up. So I'm glad to hear first grade. There's a point in the story when dad is reading Dory's favorite book to her, right?
Yeah.
And the book, at least for now in my copy, it says Sketch in Place, Not Final Art. So maybe the book title will change, but for now, it's Super Diaper Baby.
Yes.
It's Dave Pilkey.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's my connection. I want to talk Dave Pilkey with you because I love Dave Pilkey, and I think that there's qualities of the way he writes stories that you share. But Dave Pilkey, very famously on his website, used to have a comic. I don't know if he still has
about his life, about his childhood,
right
in school,
and when he's at his school visit.
Yeah, I've seen it.
The questions that three of the eight kids have in a row are, "Can I go to the bathroom?" But I feel like why my brain jumped to that is, you were a first grade teacher, so when you go into a school, you probably can already tell me the percentage of kids that raise their hand just to ask that.
Yes, yes, or just totally the most random stuff ever.
Like I know, right?
I had a school visit recently, and somebody raised their hand. This kid, first grade, totally dead serious, raised her hand and asked me, when is Mary's birthday? And Mary, you know, is Dory's imaginary friend. And I have no idea when her birthday is. Like, that is just, I am not at that level yet. And I was so kind of blown away by how real it was to her. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they say these kind of seemingly incredibly, like, weird and random stuff, but they're also brilliant.
It is. And to think, too, the level of compassion in that child's question, that they care about your book and your characters so much that they continue to look for connections. So in Mary's case, when's Mary's birthday is sort of like, I want another connection to Mary. I'm not a cat. I'm not an imaginary cat, but I have that friendship. I mean, to be, to just be part of that world, I think is something that we all want.
Yeah. It's so compassionate that it almost makes me feel careless with my characters. Like, how do I not know that? You know? So, that's amazing.
I could see that, but I could also see that because you've realized these characters so well that I almost see the opportunity for the investment of that reader, too, to wonder, when do you think her birthday is?
Right.
And to let to give, as a first grader, a chance to let them have ownership of that story, as they already do, but to be able to communicate that. That's cool. It's very cool that they ask those questions. I love... even on the cover, Dory is wearing this Batman outfit. But to think of the children that will see that cover, and will relate just on that entry point or on any other way, there's just so many things that it doesn't surprise me that first grade is your sweet spot because of the way that Dory communicates and the way that Dory, has earned her title as Rascal and, has said such sweet things. I was here. Let me find the here. One of my favorite things about what embodies Dory as a character is even though she's got this sort of turn on a dime mean streak to her.
Yeah.
It's she's six, so she's just being ruled by her emotions. She's got a little body. When those little kids have little bodies, there's not much room for other emotions. You have one emotion. 100%. And then it switches to another emotion. That's how I know my 6 year olds when I teach them. But I love that in the beginning, we see, Rosabelle, let me just read if you don't, do you mind? Would you be offended if I read to you? Is that okay?
No, that would be awesome.
Okay. So, Dory is arriving at school and it says, as soon as I see Rosabelle in the schoolyard, I forget all about
I don't know how you're supposed to say it, but I in my head said poige. Sticky poige.
Oh, you soften that J much more than I do. Poige.
Okay.
I like it. Okay, so the sticky poige. Okay. Rosabelle has a big thick chapter book in her lap and she looks up and sees me running toward her. We take turns picking each other up. It's like hugging, but more dangerous. It's fun to pick up Rosabelle because she's so poofy. She wears six skirts under her dress. She also wears a sparkly headband on her forehead, which she says is her crown. She has little tiny heels on her shoes that go clickety-click on the playground. Today she has flowers stuck in her headband that look like she made them out of tissue paper. Abby, your control over... I know that books get edited. I'm aware of the adults that touch the manuscripts before they get to be in the kids' hands.
Yeah.
And the fact that your voice is so... authentically childlike, full of wonder and energy. There's an energy to what Dory has to say and wants to observe that I just feel like you can't fake. You're definitely the right person to write this character because she's very, very easy to know. Dory is a character that we all know, and that's a special thing. She's not a character that we read. We just know her.
Yeah, well, that's really awesome to hear. And I think a lot of that, you know, that's definitely, you know, I work so hard to try to achieve that, you know, strong sense of voice. But mainly, you know, it comes from, I write out loud and I read out loud. Like, I'm always reading it aloud because I need to hear it flow. So, you know, I'll work during the day and my kids come home from school and then I'll read it out loud to them. And as I read it out loud, I edit, you know, I have to, it's just, it's such a big part of the process is reading it, especially to kids, instead of, as opposed to just writing something in my head, you know? So I think that's how, you know, that energy comes across.
Because then you're constantly getting feedback. I mean, even just alone reading it aloud, you're getting feedback of the pacing. And you being a person that does read aloud a lot and reads aloud, like books are meant to be read aloud, like they are dramas. I think allows you to get a better sense of your beats, of your pacing. And probably, too, that might even inform, I would guess, where some of these spot illustrations are that you're putting in, right? Because being able to, at some point, break up the text and just rest your eyes on Dory taking in different things in her world, I think are helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I actually do that kind of as a separate process. Like I first work on the manuscript and, you know, it's just a Word document. And in that document, I put little notations where I imagine an illustration to be. And then when I have like enough of a manuscript, I mean, there could be like pretty gaping holes, but when I have enough of something that seems like it could be a 160-page book, then I give it to the designer at Dial and she lays it out. So, I forgot a step, I guess. I put these notations where an illustration goes and then I illustrate all of them. So it's like completely separate from the text. Like I'll do like 150 sketches and then I'll give her all of the sketches and the text and then she lays it out. Do you know what I mean?
Whoa.
So
that is completely counter to the way that this feels. It feels like a long picture book. Like it's planned in place to have the picture telling some of the story and to know that it's just coming together that way. That is the magic of books. How about it?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a big, you know, after I give her everything and she flows everything together on like the correct trim size and the font, then I can, when I see it together for the first time, then I do a lot of reworking because like I'll see that, you know, like there'll be a spread without an illustration, just like, you know, for a simple example, like I really want to make, you know, I really want them to make the book as user friendly as possible for little kids who are just picking up a chapter book for the first time. So part of that is not just having an illustration on every spread, but like the illustration has to match the text on that spread. Like it can't, for me, like I don't want the illustration to go on the next page just because it overflowed. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because like as a kid, like you're looking at the illustrations to support your reading. And if you have to turn the page to find that illustration, then it didn't help you. Do you know what I mean? So, because of that, I end up changing a lot of stuff to make everything fit perfectly. I mean, I wonder if I should just, you know, like when I did a picture book, like I just did a dummy, you know, but this, I wonder sometimes like if I should approach it differently and start with the text and words together, but it's such like both are because of the length, you know, both, I guess it's sort of worked for me so far to do them separately and then tinker.
Well, it's gotta be what works for you because I think that in the way you described it originally, it seems like there's a certain flow and a pacing that you're trying to work out in the text that if you were worried about, If you allowed yourself to be distracted and worry about where all the pictures are going to go in, you might lose some of that momentum.
Right, absolutely. And like when I'm working as a writer and, you know, trying to get the manuscript in shape, I really turn off the part of my brain that's the illustrator. So it's kind of like I'm just assigning these. When I make the little notations for the illustration, I feel like it's almost like I'm assigning it to a different person, you know? And then when I actually, like, it comes the time, you know, that the manuscript is approved and I have to sit down and read these notations, I'm like, all three times, I've been like, oh my God, I cannot do this. Why did I say that this illustration would go? Like, I have, you know, it's always this, like, you know, scary, like rude awakening because, you know, there's a lot of illustrations and I'm you know, pretty new illustration. And so a lot of the notations are things that I've never drawn before and have no concept of how I'm going
to. That's awesome. Because you taught yourself to draw, correct?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I was a teacher and.
So you're drawing anyway, because kids are constantly like, can you draw a dog for me? I get that all the time.
Yeah. You know, when I was drawing, it was, you know, we did the teacher's college, you know, the Lucy Calkins writer's workshop curriculum.
Yeah. Okay.
And so at the beginning of every writer's workshop time, the teacher models a story on chart paper for the class, you know, like to use as an example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're encouraging kids to write, you know, the writer's workshop model is encouraging kids to write stories about their lives. You know, that's how kids kind of learn to write now. They're not given, I mean, you obviously know, they're not given like writing prompts or worksheets or anything like that anymore. So, I mean, so I would have to draw and write a story in front of the class, and I hadn't drawn since I was a kid. So they would be like, I mean, really horrific. But at the same time, it was the first time that I thought about using words and pictures together. Because, like, you know, that's a weird thing where, like, you just don't do that as an adult. You know, most adults, like, you can write or you can draw, but most adults don't really work with them together.
Yes.
We haven't done that since we were kids. So there was definitely this feeling of using those two things together for the first time as an adult, that something clicked in my brain. Like, as bad as I was at trying to draw my stories on chart paper for the kids, there was something about it that felt like I needed to do. So the first step, literally, I had to learn how to draw stick figures.
Love it.
Do you know those books? They teach kids how to draw, like, step by step. They're by Ed Emberley.
The Ed Emberley ones are so good. I was going to say, we have some in our library that are so hard. They're like, draw these two ovals. Now you have a finished dinosaur. I'm like, I don't know how to draw like that. But Ed Emberley, he's a good one.
That was my first step, was, you know, buying myself an Ed Emberley book when I was 28 and learning to draw stick figures. Like, you know, I would. I needed to learn how to draw stick figures moving their bodies. Like, yes. I had to learn how to move their body parts, you know? So it's still a process for me. I have a long way to go, but.
So how did you go from school teacher to wanting to write a book? Did it grow out in some way of doing, and I'm saying this because I've spent so much time reading aloud to children and doing that, where I'm working on writing stories with kids and developing stories with kids, that it just sort of activated a part of my brain again that was like, oh, remember how you used to like to write? Let's do that again. And now I'm writing again. But did that sort of have that same quality with you?
Yeah, hugely.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah. I think, you know, it was from doing this writer's workshop and then seeing, like, being really inspired by their stories, you know, by how much they were able to communicate with such few words, like these little first graders learning to write. And I was really blown away by that. And then being able to read picture books for the first time and have these awesome conversations with my class, you know, and have these big debates about picture books. And, you know, I hadn't thought about this stuff for so many years. So I started all of a sudden coming home from school trying to make a picture book. And I really, even though, you know, I had no experience drawing, you know, as I said, I really wanted to do, I knew from the very beginning that I had to learn how to draw, because, like, I couldn't think of the story without also visualizing. It was like this weird block where I couldn't do one without the other, but yet I didn't know how to draw. So I was like totally in, you know what I mean? Like, kind of just, I was just totally stuck because I couldn't move forward with the words unless I drew it, you know? So that's how I got interested in doing it. And then how I transitioned was, you know, I would work on these little manuscripts after school and do these really horrible little drawings. And and I was so clueless. I wrote this manuscript and about a little girl in my class, and I sent it off to like maybe 5 or 6 children's book agents. And I was so clueless that I didn't even know, I didn't even think to create a dummy like the way that a book turns. It was just like on, it was like, I just handed in a bunch of 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper with tiny drawings in the middle. Like there was not even a spread. It was really crazy.
And just like lots and lots of white space around it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
just like paper clipped together or whatever. And but remarkably, I actually heard from right away from one of the agents.
And you sent out like cold to agent. That's awesome. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So one of the agents, she sent it back to me. She sent the manuscript back to me and said, I'm very interested in the story for several reasons, but you should give me a call. So she put her phone number down. I was like, I thought that I had no idea how long of a road it was ahead of me still. You know what I mean?
Like, I thought, oh good, they want to buy it. I'm done.
Yeah, totally. I had no idea. But, so I called her and she said, you know, I can see this glimmer of talent in what you sent me, and I get like 100 manuscripts a week, and you know, yours stood out, she said, but she said, you have to tell me honestly, have you ever taken a drawing class in your life? And I said, no. And she said, well, you know, it really shows, and you really need to learn how to draw if you want to do this. So she said, you know, why don't you take a drawing class? And when you get better, oh, because, you know, she said, I think you can do it, which was kind of amazing that she actually not just saw the potential in my writing, but that she saw these tiny little pen drawings on these photocopied paper and thought that I could illustrate it.
The fact that she could see, she knew enough of the hundreds of manuscripts she looks at each month to go, no, this is a person that is showing those qualities of what can pay off if they work hard. That's amazing. I mean, that's talent.
If you saw what I sent her, it really is. It's like, because, I mean, at the time, like, the drawings are so unbelievably awkward. Like, I didn't know, you know, just basic, really basic stuff. But,
They worked. They worked in probably communicating the emotion of the words. You just didn't have the technique.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she said, you know, get better and then send me a postcard and show me, you know, your And so I actually communicated with her only by postcard. She never gave me her email address for like, I think almost 3 years. And then
how many postcards did you send her in 3 years?
I mean, not that many really,
but a couple.
Yeah. Because I knew, I had to, I didn't want to like bombard her, you know, but
Wait, Abby, sorry, for the teachers and the students listening, I need you to explain communicating by postcard, because we're not talking about going to CVS and writing on the back of like a postcard of Niagara Falls or whatever. Yeah. We're talking about a submission piece for an illustrator.
Yeah. Well, she wanted, I mean, I don't know, like, she wanted me to, you know, she wanted to be in touch with me, but she didn't want to like have, you know, the intimate level of me having an email. So yeah, it was just like, I would just create I would like literally just draw a picture on a piece of paper and mail it as a postcard to her.
Okay. So you would do one illustration at a time.
Yeah. For her. Okay. Yeah. It wasn't like doing any mailings, you know, like it was just like me and her. But, so then, you know, finally, like after I think 3 years, she said she decided that to take me on as a client. And then it was still another few years where I had to keep, I kind of went about learning how to draw in a really insane way, which is was really just so stubborn and bizarre. And I think like there was just so much blind determination, which is, you know, once we had the manuscript that we were both happy with, which was Ralph Tells a Story, which is my first book, which is a picture book, I kept drawing that book like over and over again for years. Like I learned how to draw by just drawing that book like 50,000 times instead of actually taking the time to like draw lots of different things. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I would just drew, like, it was really crazy. I just kept drawing that same book. And, because I just kept thinking that like it was right around the corner, you know, like I just couldn't see how long of a process it was going to be. And also like, I feel like it helped that I couldn't really see how, you know, it helped me that I couldn't see it, you know, like I kind of needed to feel that it was right around the corner. So I just kept drawing that book over and over and over again until she finally was like, okay, let's try to sell this book. And then, you know, she actually was able to sell it right away because she, you know, she knew what she was doing. But all because of that, we worked on Dory Phantasmagoria together also. And I dedicated that book to her, I said, to my fairy godmother. Because, like, I mean, I was a first grade teacher. I really was so clueless. Like, she really was my fairy godmother. I don't think that I would have made the transition if it wasn't.
Wow, Abby. When did you leave teaching?
So I taught for like 5 years, and then I had my twins, and then I stayed home with them, and then Ralph Tells a Story came out when they were in kindergarten. So I've been home. So I have twins who are now 9, and I've been home all these years not teaching and working on my books. So,
and good Lord, finding a time while raising twins, while raising any child. I'm a teacher and a father of two, and there's no time. This is the time that daddy unwinds at the end of the day, is when we get to call up Abby Hanlon and and have a podcast. Goodness. Well, I'm glad that you have continued to be such a good listener and observer of the children around you, so that you could create a character that's so authentic and so true to being 6, to being her name. Can we talk about her name? The names you have in your story. I mean, Dory Phantasmagory, Mrs. Gobblegracker is like my favorite. That was your Roald Dahl name right there, Mrs. Gobblegracker. Your names. I mean, you had said earlier that reading aloud and that flow and the way that the words come together is so important for you. And that's immediately when it came to me that I need to talk to you about these names. But it also probably answers the same question, that you're a person that just loves language that way. So you probably look for the name that feels right in your mouth when you say it, right?
I mean, I have a really weird thing with names. I agonize over every single thing, and every part of the process is really, really hard for me. But I have never struggled or thought very hard about a name. I feel like my characters come to me named. I know that sounds crazy, but they have all just arrived in my head or on my computer with their names. And I don't know who they are, and that's like hard to figure out. But I've never wondered like this name or that name. You know what I mean? That's the unconscious part.
That is a gift. I have a couple of friends that have that gift. I do not have that gift, but that is awesome, where you have a name and now you have to go, okay, Dory Phantasmagory, who are you? Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, from teaching to writing this sort of, I mean, I think what set Dory apart for me from reading the very first time I read Dory was, I mean, what was it like? When did the first book come out? 2013 or 14? A couple of years ago?
Yeah, I don't know.
To read that book is 14. like, It's such a blur. I've done a million books since then.
Oh, yeah.
A million illustrations, at least. The first time I read it, I immediately felt like it was different. And I think what made it feel different was that Dory is this character that's sort of... I hesitate to call her like an anti-hero. She gets in trouble, though. The girl, the girl doesn't quite know when to stop, when to put on the brakes. But that's, I think, what we love about her. Not only that we know kids like that, but we were kids like that, and we are adults like that, and the readers that are reading are kids like that. I mean, every one of us, I think, has Dory qualities. It's just whether or not we're willing to own up and say, oh yeah, this is I'm this kind of a person or not. Like when she and George were pretending. So okay, I need to talk very specifically about this book. I need to give you the service of talking specifically about Dory Black Sheep, because I feel like we've gone all this way and I haven't gotten a chance to talk about your new book. But I like in Dory Black Sheep that we have it's a book about reading and being a reader and having a friend who's a really strong reader, and you're still at the point where you're not quite there. And this is really great revealing point in the beginning when she and George are set to go read these beginning readers. And all of them are farm books. The teacher, where is it? The teacher, she comes over and says, "We pretend we are reading until she leaves." It's just, that's a thing. That's a thing that kids do. And for you, Abby, to tell it like it is to these, these 5 and 6 year olds is great.
I mean, you know, I've gotten a lot of communication from parents from the first two books, and they often tell me that Dory is the first book that their child was able to read independently, or the first chapter book. And, that's, you know, great. And then part of that is that, you know, there's also like a lot of, you know, they tell me often that, you know, their child is a struggling reader. And, you know, I always knew that Dory was a struggling reader. You know, I wanted to give it its own book. You know what I mean? Like, I always saw her that way. But I used a lot of I borrowed a lot from my own kids' experience struggling to read, and then of course, you know, as a first grade teacher, and you know, in first grade there's just such a vast disparity of reading abilities.
Yes.
Like it's just unbelievable. Like the kids come in. Some kids come in reading Harry Potter and they're really reading it and they're understanding it, you know? And then there's other kids like just cannot, like they really just can read a few words. And so I think, you know, that's hard. And I wanted to write about that because, you know, I saw kids in my class struggle, and I watched my own kids, you know, just, you know, that feel. Like I remember my son, you know, burst into tears once when his friend was telling him like what chapter of Harry Potter he was on. And it's raw, you know, that feeling. I mean, that's like, you feel like, you know, this is your big moment. Why isn't it happening?
Yes. Why isn't it happening? Why can't I read? Everyone else is reading. Why not me yet?
Yeah.
Well, I like that you were able then to do what you did with Dory, the way that she, I mean, I love, one of the qualities I love so much about this story is the literal going inside the book, like to be in, picture yourself in the story, and Dory is like literally the story, the characters are coming out. There's a lot that you wrote in this story that is so reflective of the journey of becoming a reader and the struggle of becoming a reader and identifying yourself as a reader. And how do you do it? Maybe if I just lock myself in the bathroom and don't come out until I can read, or there's just so many things that are so truthful here. And I think that's your deal with Dory. I mean, in with the new friend and with the first book, it's all just, you're at an age when you have to discover yourself, and some of that is going to be messy. And and that's part of the journey. And so I think for you, Abby, to be giving kids that are going through that, with parents that are going through that with those kids, a book that is so honest and is so raw. Dory's a really raw character, and to be to have that, I mean, it's just, it's a really great thing. Before I blubber on anymore, do you mind if I ask for you, how do you describe Dory? Who is Dory to you?
Okay. Well, the way that I describe her is that she's a combination of myself and I have boy-girl twins who are 9 now. But when I first came up with Dory, they were 5. And, you know, it's from the part from myself is really my feelings. You know, my feelings as a child, nothing that like concrete or that actually happened, but just the feeling of being the third child and kind of always being the baby. Mm. And then I sort of just combined those feelings with all of the details and humor of my kids, you know, like all of their games and weirdness and spazziness, I put into Dory. So, I mean, it's real. I love hearing and something that I often hear is that the book feels like really authentic kid experience. And I mean, that's because it really, I just stole everything from my kids. Like I didn't make it up. I couldn't, you know, like anything that feels like, oh my God, how'd she think of it? It's because I didn't. My kids are so creative and, you know, I'm always inspired by them. I'm always spying on them. And, you know, I'm just amazed by, you know, their ability and, you know, and their friends and other kids around us, you know, watching how they are just constantly inventing and reinventing and just like just the huge sense of freedom and joy in pretending and how transporting that is. It's just as a parent, it's kind of like, I mean, that is also sort of how I came up with the idea of just watching my kids play, but feeling like here I am, like sitting on the couch or washing the dishes or whatever, but they are not here. You know what I mean? Like they're here, yes, but they're in another world. Like they're screaming at somebody who's not here and kind of just being blown away by how like these two worlds were existing at the same time when they were playing, you know? And so that's how I came up with Dory. And, you know, I'm still really dependent on my kids. I mean, they write the book with me. They, you know, I told you, like, we read it together and we edit it together. I mean, at this point, I mean, honestly, they are actually pretty sick of Dory. And, like, I drive them crazy. They're, Burke's like, my son's like, just write book number 20, Dory Drops Dead. You know? Like, there's a lot of, like, Dory hatred in my house sometimes. But at the same time, like she's a composite of all of us and she's kind of like this awesome place where we can put like all of our family jokes into. Do you know what I mean? Like yeah. If something funny happens, like we kind of all know that that's where it's going to go. And we can sort of like if something sort of Dory-ish happens, like we can kind of expand on it together to put it in the book. You know what I mean? Like just by just talking. Like, so, I mean, a lot of times they'll give me their ideas, like, often they're just like too bizarre to translate, but most of the ideas really just come from like this organic thing of just being with them.
That's beautiful. That's to know that there are kids behind a godmother named Mr. Nuggy, or that there are kids behind any number of totally rando things I could call you out on is amazing. I love that you described Dory as being a bit spastic. That's a great word. But I also love that you describe her with so much love, because that's, I think that there's a lot of love that pours out of her, a lot of really sweet, endearing qualities that I just keep coming back to that point whenever I read this story. And what a great book it is to be read aloud with your child, because for a parent to experience this really, I think, is in a neat way a time capsule for your, you know, that experience you have of raising a child. It's really a cool thing, Abby. You did good, buddy. You did real good.
Okay.
I look forward to many, many Dories in the future. I know you've probably got a couple more that are planned, right?
Definitely Dory 4 is in the works.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad that you had a chance to break and come up for air and talk to me when you did.
This was fun. It was really such a treat, and I'm so honored to be on your podcast. Thank you. You do such a great job and make people feel really comfortable and welcome and celebrated.
You're making me feel uncomfortable because you know, one, the attention on me is very hard, but two, it's because of both of us, but it's because of your really great books and people like you doing that for our kids that you make it so easy for us as librarians and teachers to just be like, here, child, here's where you're going to understand yourself better through this book, through this friend you're going to make, through this experience of you reading aloud with your parent. Dory is in no uncertain terms a book that I've handed to families knowing that like this is going to be a part of your life. You're going to have a moment here because you're going to share this together, much like those moments I have with my kid when we read aloud together. So for all of that, Abby, and for all of us that are such fans of Dory, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Matthew.
All right, I'm gonna leave you with giving you the chance to have final say to the children that we all work so hard to serve. I'm gonna see a library full of children tomorrow morning or soon when this podcast releases, Abby. And I'd love to ask you, what message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
Okay. When I visit schools, I always, I try to share, when I share my process with kids, I always try to share this concept that the best stories are about little things. And, you know, I always remind kids that you don't have to write about a big life event, you know, like a vacation or a birthday party. You can write a story about taking a bath or a new pair of pants or a bucket of mud. So, you know, at the end of my school presentation, I always tell kids this secret. The secret to being a writer is noticing and remembering the little things that happen to you every day.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed.
Coming up on the podcast, John Clausen returns to share We Found a Hat, the final book in his Hat trilogy. See you then, and thanks for listening.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favorite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.